from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll chat with an artist and a librarian who are part of the library's annual Meet the Artist celebration of African American art.
I'll give a listen to writer and musician David Bagdad's new bluegrass album.
And I'll get a preview of Butler Ballet's Midwinter Dance Festival. Plus, we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. African-American artists are once again highlighted at Central Library during the Meet the Artist 24 exhibit, on view through March 31st. Sharon Gamble invited Kim Jones, a member of the Library's African-American History Committee, and artist Javoris McCrary to our studios to learn more.
Kim, I know you've been on the African-American History Committee. Am I calling it the right title?
Yes, that is correct.
And is that for the entire library system?
It is.
That's a tall order. So you're planning events throughout the year around the entire system of
26 libraries.
Yeah.
That is correct.
But this is kind of the crown jewel, right?
It is the crown, one of the crown jewels, mm-hmm. I think, because it's the longest running program that we've had. This is the 24th year of Meet the Artist.
I can't believe it's been almost a quarter of a century.
Yes.
So no pressure or anything, but when you do the 25th one, it's going to have to be extra special.
Yes.
One of the highlights, I mean, the exhibition itself is a highlight, but one of the highlights is the gala, and I'd like you to tell us a little bit about that. There's something for everybody, just about.
Yes. The gala is an opening reception that is scheduled for Saturday, February the 18th, and it runs from 5:45 to 10 o'clock in the evening. We have a program of artists and performers. And the different performers that we have a drum ensemble called the Griot Drum Ensemble. We have a guest poet. We have family entertainment, which is the Crash Crew Gospel Dance Troupe. And we also have Vicki Daniels and Friends Band. And we have a fashion show to end the night.
That fashion show's really the hot
like
thing
the
to see, isn't
deal.
It?
Yeah. Yes.
And there's a theme. This year the fashion show theme is Signs of the Times?
Yes, that is the theme for the show this year. And so we'll just have to wait and see what she means by sign of the time, because I'm just as much in the dark as you are with this one.
She being Jackie Fuqua, right?
Jackie Fuqua, mm-hmm. Yes.
Javoris, I said before we turned on the microphones that I had looked at some images on the internet of your work, and I was expecting a much more seasoned artist. How long have you been an artist?
I've been dabbling in drawing and painting all of my life.
What turned you onto it?
Just one of those things. As a child, I picked up a pencil and I just wanted to doodle and draw, and it kept me out of trouble and just kept my interest. And over the years, I received encouragement, and I stuck with it.
Is there a particular living or dead artist whose work you saw and said, oh, my gosh, I didn't know art could do that. I didn't know visual art could do that.
Henri Matisse, when I first came to learn about Henri Matisse, I thought his style was very primitive. And as I researched him, I learned that he was actually an accomplished artist, and his style progressed to a primitive style. So
Sounds counterintuitive, doesn't it?
It does. And that really, really opened my eyes to a new understanding of progression and transformation.
It's intriguing to think about phases of your own development. Do you have enough distance on your own earlier work that you can step back and go, oh, I see what I was doing then, but I'm not that person anymore?
Exactly. I've come to that point most recently where I realized how to tap into more of the meaning of what I want to convey instead of just setting out to paint. I have a purpose in the painting now. There's a call to what I'm creating.
Hmm.
So there's more of a sense of passion in what I'm doing.
What's your method like? Are you able to work on multiple pieces at a time? Are you super disciplined? Do you set aside certain hours every day and go in your studio? And
I find bursts of creativity. So I'll have a brainstorming moment where a lot of ideas will just flow. And I keep a small sketch pad where I just try to jot down the concept. I'll doodle it maybe 1 or 2 minutes per idea, and I move to the next one. And when I am in that disciplined mode, I can tap into that sketch pad and create the painting or the drawing.
So you don't necessarily restrict yourself to one medium. You like mixed media.
Exactly. When I was in an apartment, I stuck to acrylic. I found it to be a lot cleaner medium.
And it dries faster.
It dries faster and is a lot cleaner. But now I have a larger painting space, and I'm really stepping out and exploring other mediums and larger compositions, which is really exciting.
That's cool. Now, is this your first time to be part of Meet the Artist?
Actually, it's my second time.
I thought I remembered you from maybe 2 years ago?
Last year, okay. Last year, I was able to display some woodcut prints.
Right.
And the exposure was great, the opportunity was great, and I was very excited to be invited back.
And I have to say, those prints had almost an Asian, like 16th century Japanese feel to me. I don't know if that's what you're going after or not, but they just had this classic balance to them, great sensibility.
There are a lot of correlations in the printmaking process to the woodblock print with that Asian printmaking technique.
Yeah, the Hokusai Hiroshige.
Exactly.
Kind of era.
Exactly.
So what is it like, and I'm going to ask you both to answer this from different perspectives. One of the great things about the gala is it's called the Meet the Artist Gala for a reason. Kim, as a committee member, what is your intention? Why is it cool to get the artists there and the public to get to meet them?
Okay, our intention is to inform the community and teach them that art is all around us. So we have the Meet the Artist Gala, and this year we have 15 artists, plus we have 4 local authors. So it's not just art, it's writers, it's entertainment.
The musicians, but the
fashion. The fashion is on the artist.
Yeah.
So I think art is one area that kind of gets forgotten sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So you get to see the entertainers all the time, but you don't really get to see the artist, and we wanted to put the artist in the front.
So it's less passive and it's more a chance to interact.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is it like for you to meet people who see your art? I mean, making visual art can be kind of a lonely process,
mm-hmm.
but then this is a chance to be there and to maybe, before people see your name tag, kind of watch people responding to your work. What is that like?
It's very stimulating. To stand back and watch someone peer into that painting and just get their reactions, and you could, you know, watch people communicating with one another about a piece. It really, really taps into, you know, the reason that I enjoy displaying my art is I want someone to enjoy it. So when I can see the audience, you know, viewing the art, it gives me a sense of purpose and appreciation.
Do you ever have trouble parting with your work? These pieces are all for sale, right?
They are for sale. I don't have a problem with it. I really want the art to be enjoyed. So I think that's a great way to pass it on.
How did you choose which pieces from your current batch would be in this show?
I wanted to show some diversity in my styles. Mm-hmm. I like different mediums and different styles, so I picked striking pieces from maybe each style.
Mm-hmm.
Like Father Time is reminiscent of a pop art style, so I included that. I have another piece that's abstract, so I just tapped into different styles that I've experimented or explored.
Mm-hmm. Do you know any of the other artists who are in the show? Do you have do you have any kind of support group in your life where you get together with other visual artists, and if you're having artistic block or just to say, hey, I'm having trouble with this, can you help me?
Yeah, I have not done that, but I have had the opportunity to meet Kevin West. He's a visual artist. And when I went down to the library for the photo shoots for the flyer, mm-hmm. I met Loban. I think his last name's Hamilton. Mm-hmm. I met Loban.
Mm-hmm.
So I have had the opportunity to meet those gentlemen.
So there's a little bit of networking going on there.
A little bit.
We could start this this coffee klatch if we
wanted. There you go.
Right.
Yes.
What are you most excited about this year?
Last year, I showcased some woodblock prints, mm-hmm. and they were relatively small. But this year, I was able to display some larger items, and I'm really excited about the size of the pieces that are going to be on display. I think it just makes for a more striking presentation.
Mm-hmm. And Kim, as a committee member, what Is there a place we can go to learn about the events that are going on at other times of year as well? Is there a portal through the main library website?
Yes, it is. If you would just visit our website at www.imcpl.org, then you can find all the information about Meet the Artist as well as other library programs that we have throughout the year.
Sharon Gamble with visual artist Javoris McCrary and librarian and African American History Committee member Kim Jones. You can see Meet the Artist 24 at Central Library through March 31st, and you can meet the 15 visual artists, 4 authors, poets, dance troupes, musicians, and also see Jackie Fuqua's fashion show at the Meet the Artist Gala on Saturday, February 18th from 5 to 10 p.m. The gala is free and open to all. You can find out more at imcpl.org. Indianapolis Marion County Public Library, again, imcpl.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Last year, Travis DiNicola interviewed Dave Bagdad about his book, A Year in Mudville, An Oral History of Casey Stengel and the Original Mets, a narrative-driven look at the 1962 New York Mets, widely regarded as the worst baseball team of all time. Dave is back now for another interview with Travis, but this time it revolves around his other passion, bluegrass music. Bagdad has just released a CD of all original bluegrass music titled History in My Hands.
Dave, welcome back to Art of the Matter.
Thanks, Travis. It's great to be back here with you.
It's a little bit different than where we were a year ago. Just very briefly, you were on Art of the Matter a year ago talking about a book that had recently come out that that you had published, a terrific book.
Thank you.
On the New York Mets.
Well, not just any New York Mets.
That's right.
The 1962 New York Mets.
The first year of the New York Mets.
And reputed to be the worst baseball team of all time, or at least the 20th century.
And you certainly made a good case for it within your book. And it was a really fun, great book, and I really enjoyed reading that. I loved getting together and chatting with you about that, because I'm a big Mets fan. But yet here we are, and we're actually not going to be talking about baseball at all today. We're going to be talking bluegrass. Yeah. And you've got a new bluegrass album out that is just a ton of fun, and it's also really interesting to me because it's all original bluegrass music, which
yes.
is pretty unusual. Tell me about how we got from baseball to bluegrass.
Well, they've always sort of existed side by side in my psyche. I've been a bluegrass fan since mm-hmm. I was about 16 years old, and for those of you not able to see me at home, I'm quite a bit older than 16 years old now, so...
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
So but,
it's been, let's just say, a while.
And you've been playing the guitar, mandolin, other instruments for quite a while as well?
Yes. I've always been in a number of bands,
yeah.
and I've always been in at least one bluegrass band and sometimes more.
Okay.
And, I mean, again, I don't know about professional or not, but in 2008, I played in public 113 times, so...
And eventually someone had to pay you for that. Whether to
so I don't know if that's stuff. Professional or yeah. not, but I do play a lot.
Okay. Now, but so during this time you've been playing a lot of bluegrass.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of bluegrass is very traditional. Right before we went on the air, we were talking about Bill Monroe, a lot of songs from Bill Monroe as well as other traditional songs. And I'm guessing that's sort of what you've been playing for quite a while as well.
Yes. Well, I've always been a songwriter, mm-hmm. but I've always been, you know, interested in the traditions of bluegrass and sort of paying heed to them.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, my next book, which is in progress right now, is going to be an oral history of bluegrass.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And along a similar format as the oral history of New York Mets book that mm-hmm. we talked about last time I was here.
Very good. Okay.
But since I became a bluegrass fan at age 16, I've been interested in where the music came from, what the roots were, who started it, what influenced them, and so on, all the way back to, you know, pre-bluegrass country music
sure.
and music from the British Isles and all sorts of things like that.
You know, one of the things I really liked about your album is even though these are all, you know, new original songs, there's a real sense to all of them that, especially I think with the opening track, We Can Just Pretend, that you've kind of heard this song before. You kind of feel like you know this song.
It's one of the things that I like to do with my original songs. I don't want to stray too far outside the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like to keep it progressive, and I like to do interesting things, and I like to challenge the listener sometimes. You know, it's not a coincidence that my favorite band of all time is the Newgrass Revival, which is a group that really
sure.
took traditional bluegrass and put in electric instruments and brought in elements of rock and roll and jazz and all these other sorts of things. But at bottom, I like to write new songs
mm-hmm.
that evoke old songs.
You also had a lot of friends join you on this album, too.
Yes, I was very fortunate.
My guess is you had a lot of fun recording this.
It was a lot of fun.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the most fun that I think they had with one particular recording experience was the tune you just mentioned, We Can Just Pretend,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of the love song for codependence. If this ain't love, we can just pretend. And I had all the tracks recorded, and I was mm-hmm. waiting on a couple of banjo-playing friends of mine. And I happened to be in Lisbon, Portugal,
okay.
in the fall of 2010 with my partner, Linda. And I had done a little bit of research before I'd gone over there and found that there was one bluegrass musician in all of Portugal. And he happened
wild.
To be a banjo player named André Dahl,
mm-hmm.
who lived in Lisbon. And so
one in all of Portugal.
One in all of Portugal. He's got a band, actually.
Of course.
So he's got some recruits that
okay.
he's sort of led kicking and screaming by the scruff of the neck into playing bluegrass with
mm-hmm.
him. But he's an excellent banjo player. And I thought while I was sitting there recording with him that I'd get him to play a track on this album.
Mm-hmm.
So I had my recording rig with me, and everything was all good to go. And we recorded André's banjo part for that tune while sitting in the front room of his family's Indian restaurant in Lisbon, Portugal.
How fun. You know, and I have to say, when I'm listening to the track, I never would have guessed that.
Well, that's the idea.
It's a very fun track. I got to say, with the one track, Somebody Else's Problem, I did actually find myself singing along to it on the chorus. I was driving down Meridian Street, and next thing I know, I'm like singing it as if I've heard the song forever.
Ah, the songwriter's dream.
Leaving you to your forevermore. Cause now you're somebody else's problem. I guess we'll see how long you want him. What your wandering spirit will allow. Someone new stepped up to claim you. Now we'll see if he can tame you. You're somebody else's problem now. Someone else can try.
What I really enjoyed are some of the stories behind these songs. Some that are alluded to, some that are very clear and specific within the songs. Let's talk about some of these.
Okay.
I know that one that you wanted to mention is From Rosine to Rosedale, because that one has some really interesting history to it. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a tune that my band Diamond Hill Station plays very frequently. It's kind of a blues waltz, and the title refers to Rosine, Kentucky, the mm-hmm. ancestral home place of Bill Monroe, who's the father of bluegrass. And Rosedale refers to Rosedale, Mississippi, which is one of the alleged locations where the crossroads is that Robert Johnson is reputed to have made his deal with the devil.
Sure,
to get his guitar playing talents.
Somewhere along the line, someone had to stop by and get some food, and that's where the Recession Special comes into play,
yes.
I'm guessing?
Yes. The Recession Special is a food item served at Robert's Western World in Nashville, which is a very well-known eating, drinking, and live music establishment.
And right $5 will get you...
$5 will get you a fried bologna sandwich and a bag of chips, your choice of moon pie or goo goo cluster... and an ice cold can of PBR.
Excellent. What more do you need?
Tricky. Money is surely getting tight. At Robert's Western World there in Nashville, $5 recession special do you right. Recession special is what I want. Beats the hell out of a stuffy restaurant. On my advice, you can depend. Best $5 you'll ever spend.
That's a party.
Okay, so some of the other songs just left me laughing as I was listening to them. Specifically, I'm thinking of Hiram Byram's Country Store. Where is this place and what is all in there?
Well, unfortunately, it sort of only exists in the confines of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But we've all been, and any one of us who's traveled into, a small town, sees the general store or the curio shop or this place that's got things on the shelves that make you wonder, what on earth was somebody ever thinking to put this out there for sale?
Right, and this is the store
just
that has
sort of
it
took
all.
It to a different extreme.
Changes it once a year. It's got Schlitz and Blatz and Ballantine and even Falstaff beer. You can string up your old Martin box with Black Diamond brand, the original black label, not the ones made in Japan. Get extra heavy, then you're ready to roar. You won't believe you found it at Hiram Byram's County Store.
The whole album is sort of, just fun like that. I mean, you can listen to it for the really fun music. Again, great stories in the lyrics. You can tell that you had a good time putting it together, as I said before.
It was a lot of fun.
So what's next for you? More bluegrass?
There's a lot of things on the horizon this year. We've got Diamond Hill Station. Well, hopefully, we've just been invited to appear at the European World of Bluegrass Festival at Amsterdam in May, so we're trying to work out the logistics in order to go to that. I'm going to did a Celtic
good
album.
Good luck with that, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be fun. In addition to bluegrass, Celtic music is very, very deep in my soul, sort of, you know, pay tribute to those Scots-Irish roots that I don't actually have, but did a Celtic album in 2010, so I'm going to be working on another one very shortly this year, which may wind up being two albums, one focused on Irish music and one on the music of Cape Breton, which is a region in Nova Scotia, Canada.
You know, I would be remiss here to not mention that clearly history is such an important part of what you do, whether it's in your writing, the oral histories you work with, the music you create. And, of course, the album is called History in My Hands, and that's one of the songs on the album. And it's talking about a pretty special instrument. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, okay. Well, you're right, first of all, on history being very important to me. And it touches pretty much everything that I do creatively.
I stopped into a roadside shop somewhere along the way. An old man came out from the back to pass the time of day. I told him what I dreamed of, and he stood up with a smile. He said, I've got one here, she ain't for sale, but you can see her for a while. He came back with a mandolin and handed her to me. The label said the Gibson, July 1923. My heart stopped beating.
History in My Hands came about as sort of the, well, any musician who appreciates old or vintage instruments kind of has this fantasy where they go into a pawn shop and they see a 1954 Fender Stratocaster.
Sure.
Or something like that.
Right, right.
Well, for bluegrass musicians, and particularly bluegrass mandolinists, the Holy Grail instrument is a Gibson Lloyd Lohr F5 mandolin.
Okay.
These are made during a very special period in Gibson's history, where there was a sound designer named Lloyd Lohr who worked with the company.
Okay.
And produced really, really high-end instruments.
I'm guessing now they're very collectible and few and far between.
They are beyond collectible at this point.
Okay.
There's about a three-year period that Lohr was with the company and supervised the making of instruments. The Holy Grail is the F5.
Okay.
The Holy Grail is an F5 signed by Lloyd Lohr personally. And the holiest of Holy Grails are those that were signed by Mr. Lohr on July 8th or 9th, 1923, which is the date that Mr. Monroe's mandolin was signed.
Wow, okay.
So the
song, there's a picture of you holding one of these. Now,
yes.
I believe in 1924, Lohr signed mandolin.
That is correct.
Not one that you own, one that someone very kindly let you play.
Let's just say that I held on to it very, very carefully because the price tag on that instrument was about $220,000.
Wow. So what makes, is it just great sound? I mean, unbelievable sound out of these? And
it is.
I mean,
that.
Certainly the rarity in the history as well.
And, and the provenance, the fact that this is something that Monroe played.
Yeah.
But they are incredible instruments. They are just absolutely above and beyond pretty much anything else that you could ever hope to find.
And, of course, the song that you wrote is about...
is about finding one in a very unlikely location.
Yeah, very, very cool stuff. Well, Dave, it's always a pleasure to chat with you and with your many interests, from baseball to bluegrass and beyond.
I don't sit still for very long, do I?
No, I'm looking forward to hearing what you've got up your sleeve for the next time we get together. But until then, I hope people enjoy listening to your new CD, History in My Hands. Where are places that they can pick it up?
Well, the easiest place to get it is to get it from me at a show. And you can get my full calendar at mandodave.com. You can also order the CDs and the books through mandodave.com. And for information strictly relating to the book, you can check it out at ayearinmudville.com.
Very good. Dave, thanks so much for being on Art of the Matter again. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Travis.
Travis DiNicola with author and musician Dave Bagdad. His new CD is titled History in My Hands, and you can get more information at mandodave.com, MANDODAVE.com.
Check the music papers to see if she's for sale somewhere. When I drove back by...
Travis, I have the checklist here. Let's see if you are ready. Do you have some handmade chocolates?
Yes, check.
Do you have a bubbly libation?
Yes, I do. Check.
Do you have a pretty pink and red card?
Ooh, I need a card.
Yep.
Maybe I'll make one.
That's excellent. And there's only one more thing you're going to need for your Valentine.
What's that, Sharon?
Something to go out and see or do with her. And we have suggestions on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You might want to actually, you know, you're onto something there. You might want to go into one of the local bookstores or gift stores. And maybe you'll find a card handmade by a local artist Valentine. Now, in case you're like, wait, Valentine's Day?
Yeah,
that's
it's
coming
around
up.
The corner.
It's on Tuesday.
Tuesday, guys. Guys, if you haven't figured it out yet, basically, right, you're not going to get away with shopping this weekend. She'll know. So that leaves you Monday, okay?
We always do. It's true.
But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of great events going on some fun things to take your sweetie to, such as Romance and Remembrance, of course, which is at the Benjamin Harrison Presidential Site. This is quite a big evening. It's a dinner for couples at the President Benjamin Harrison Site. Includes a string quartet and love letters read between President Ben and Caroline, his wife, and dinner at the Propylaeum, and it's very nice. It is $160 per couple. But there's also some other cool things going on at President Benjamin Harrison, including their presidential huddle, which is just now through Monday, which is their exhibit of Super Bowl-themed items that are football-related to different presidents, including Theodore Roosevelt, Hoover, Eisenhower, Nixon, Kennedy, Ford, Reagan, Bush, and Obama. So that's kind of cool. And so President Benjamin Harrison home over there on Delaware Street is doing some pretty cool stuff.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
See, love, get that. It's the theme.
Oh, wow.
Sorry. Hey, maybe your sweetie's a little counterculture-esque, and he or she would like the first film presented by the Irvington Guild of Artists. That's coming up. You'll need to put a note in the card that you give your sweetheart on Tuesday, because this event isn't coming up until Sunday, February 26th. But it is a showing of the film, $100 and a T-shirt, and it concerns the DIY, or do-it-yourself, magazine scene, or the zine scene, as it's called in the circles. It's set in Portland, Oregon, and it's hybrid graphic novel, journal, comic book, and visual musings. It's a whatever-I-want-to-write-about-and-publish genre.
Cool.
And that's the subject of this film, $100 and a T-shirt. The showing is at the Bonna Thompson Memorial Center, 5350 East University Avenue. It's free. If you gather at 6 o'clock, there are complimentary edibles. Films at 6:30 has a little bit of irreverent language, but there's also going to be a film discussion afterwards if you'd like to stay around.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Very good. Hey, Indy's favorite tenor, also known as Stephen Stoll, and also known as the host of Stolen Moments here on WFYI. Well, he's a fantastic singer as well, and he is doing a very special Valentine dinner concert at the Cabaret at the Columbia Club. Get more information at thecabaret.org. But, of course, it is taking place on Valentine's Day, one night only, and tickets are selling out quick. If you don't have them yet, definitely check this out. This would be a very romantic dinner to have there at the Columbia Club and hear Stephen Stolen sing.
But maybe you don't want to be normal. Maybe you don't want to go out on February 14th. Maybe you'd like to celebrate on February 17th. That's Friday night next
week.
Okay,
let's do that instead then. What would you do then, Sharon?
Well, if you or your sweetie likes to sing, it's open mic night at Chef Joseph's.
I heard about this. This is going to be a hoot.
It's going to be great. You need to bring your sheet music for Sean Baker and the Baby Grand if you'd like to take a role in the spotlight. Chef Joseph is dishing out small plates to entertain your palate. The bar opens at 5, music begins at 7, and Chef Joseph's is just 1.5 blocks northeast of Monument Circle in downtown Indianapolis, 115 East Ohio Street. Go to chefjosephs.com for more information. And, of course, you're not required to participate in the open mic portion. You
can
just go and support your friend or your sweetie. And that's, again, next Friday night, the 17th.
And that's Chef Joseph's at the Connoisseur Room. Mm-hmm. Really fantastic food, by the way. Of course, that's Chef Joseph, who used to be the chef at Agio.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, but Sean Baker is always just a ton of fun on the piano.
Yeah.
That should be a really good night.
Yeah.
Something else coming up next weekend that would be a great thing to take your sweetie to. It's the second weekend of It's All Greek to Me, Gregory Hancock Dance Theater's annual cabaret-style show with food and drink and lots of great dancing and music. And OPA! So reservations go out very, very quickly
for
this.
Flaming cheese is going
there
by.
Goes. GregoryHancockDanceTheater.org for more information.
Hey, I have two things you can do with your sweetie next week. Maybe you just want to make a whole Valentine's week of it. These two both involve cellist Matt Heimovitz and pianist Christopher O'Reilly. Matt Heimovitz has this great reputation as kind of a crossover artist, and he kind of gets a kick out of doing concerts in bars, just to mix it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And you know, occasionally doing a little bit pop or rock music as well. He and Christopher O'Reilly are being brought to town for a concert that will be at the Toby next Thursday, February 16th at 7:30. The Ensemble Music Society are bringing the two of them in. The concert is called Shuffle Play. Repeat. I'm sorry, Shuffle Play. Listen. I had to think through my iTunes
rinse twice
vocabulary there. Yeah. That's going on Thursday night. But because they're going to be in town, Matt Heimovitz is going to do a shorter solo performance as featured artist at the White Rabbit Cabaret the night before. That's next Wednesday night, February 15th. The show's at 8, doors open at 7, and you can get free admission to the White Rabbit Show on Wednesday if you buy a ticket when you're there to the Thursday evening concert at IMA or show your advance purchase ticket at the door. So, whew, that's a lot to navigate. EnsembleMusic.org gives you the rest of the information about Matt Heimovitz, Christopher O'Reilly next week. Be there or be square.
Very good. Hey, Sunday, February 19th, 3 o'clock, the Indianapolis Opera Ensemble is going to be performing Opera a la Carte. And this is a group that's been an ensemble assembled from across the country to sing the leads in different upcoming productions that they are doing. And they are getting together in this program for a whole bunch of sort of greatest hits, if you will. And the program will have some favorites from HMS Pinafore, as well as some other great performances. Concert time is at 3 p.m. at the Friends United Church of Christ, located at 8300 South Meridian Street.
Hey, you know a gesture that really shows your sweetheart you care?
Not one that I saw during the Super Bowl halftime show. But...
Oh, ouch! No, and it doesn't require dancing in high-heeled boots, as Madonna did.
What is the gesture you're thinking
you're
of, Sharon?
You're going to help your sweetheart by cleaning out his or her used books, DVDs, CDs, audiobooks, and video games. You know that room that's loosely referred to as the office in your house or your apartment that really desperately needs to be cleaned out? Well, you're going to go in there. You're not going to get rid of anything without your sweetheart's permission. No, I don't want to get anybody in trouble here. But what are you going to do with all that stuff after you box it up? You are going to give it to the Indy Reads Stock the Shelves Drive, taking just about everything except for textbooks and magazines, but gently used books, DVDs, CDs, audiobooks, video games. There are drop sites, a number of places, including WFYI, where we're broadcasting from, mm-hmm. the Indy Reads Office, Best Chocolate in Town, Global Gifts, the Athenaeum, YMCA, and others as well. I'm not going to go through all the details right now, but if you go to indiereads.org, you can find out more about that. And think how happy your sweetie will be.
What a great idea.
Absolutely.
Hey, last thing that I want to share is just to let you know, parents out there who are listening, if your kids are in theater, or kids, if you're listening and you want to be in some theater, the Summer Conservatory auditions for the IRT are coming up very, very soon. Audition dates are the beginning of March. You need to start working on your monologues now, and you do need to schedule an actual audition time for this. Great training down at the IRT. You do need to give them a call to get more information, but definitely start thinking about that now. There are scholarships available.
Fantastic. All right. Well, whatever you do, don't forget to appreciate somebody you love, whether it's a sweetie or a friend. Buy some local art, participate in some local art, and we'll be back next week with more things to see, do, taste, enjoy, hear, etc. on
that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Butler University is the first collegiate program ever to receive permission to perform a piece by Nacho Duato. Duato is a world-renowned Spanish choreographer who's also artistic director of the Mikhailovsky Ballet in Russia. Voz por Muerto, For You I Die, will be the centerpiece of Butler Ballet's Midwinter Dance Festival on Friday, February 17th and Saturday, February 18th at 8 p.m. at Clues Memorial Hall. Sharon invited Duato's ballet master, Kevin Irving, as well as Butler Dance Department member Derek Reed, into our studio recently.
First of all, how did Butler score this coup? And secondly, what does it mean to students at Butler? Derek, I'm going to start with you.
Well, yeah, I'll start because I think this is certainly my experience professionally was working with choreographers like Nacho Duato. And I think since I've been here, I've been trying to get those opportunities for students. I think they need more challenging work, and that gives them something to put on their resume as they prepare for the professional world. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where it started, is just the desire to bring that. And then circumstance had it, you know, Kevin called, and he was wondering if we wanted to do something like that, if it was even going to be just a workshop.
Hmm.
And one thing led to another, and then we were able to get him to come and set this piece. So that's kind of how it started, and hopefully it'll finish with a wonderful piece for Indianapolis to see.
Mm-hmm. And Kevin, you're in a wonderful position, having kind of the worldwide view of dance. What is Butler's dance department known for? What is the reputation out there?
I think I'm not going to answer that question.
Okay.
That's because I don't really know.
Okay. Ask again in a few weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Come back to me on that. But, I mean, just taking up the thread from where Derek left off, a lot of it is personal connection. And, you know, in any business, I think you have a certain amount of things that are driven by person X knows person Y, and person Y knows person V, and they kind of talk in amongst themselves. And so the fact that Derek was here, you know, made me think, you know, it's a college university. What I do know about Butler is that it has an excellent reputation, and it has an excellent reputation stretching back for a number of years. And so, you know, I mentioned that, you know, this is something that I do, you know, and I'm interested in doing, because the education of young dancers has to include the opportunity to engage with the most important work that's out there. And because dance is so ephemeral, that work needs constant updating. You can't do the most important work of the 1940s and consider it contemporary. So Nacho Duato is one of the most important choreographers still alive and working today. And certainly in terms of European dance, he's really at the top of the heap. And because of my long association with him, I have the ability to say actually to him, look, I think that the college students at Butler University would benefit from knowing your choreography. And would you be generous enough to allow me to stage something for them and not charge the kind of fees that, you know, a company would be paying?
Sure.
Because it really is an experience that is not, it's not the same as professional dancers doing it. It's a combination of trying to get them to a professional level and also understanding that they are still on that journey that will take them there, and that this is actually a tool for them to hone their skills and to take their artistry to another level. So my connection to Nacho and my connection to Derek and Butler University kind of have put this package all together.
Did he hesitate when you asked?
No. I have now, this is, Butler is the first collegiate program in the U.S. to do a work by Nacho Duato, but I have staged his work in a kind of parallel program that's in Rotterdam called Code Arts. And actually, this particular version of the piece that I'm staging is called Por Vos Muero, which translates roughly to I Die for Thee. And I'm doing a shortened version, a condensed version, and I first staged it at that school in Rotterdam, mm-hmm. which is also a dance program with a great reputation.
When you approach it with the students, do you you kind of answer this, but I want you to expand on this a little bit. What kind of accommodations do you make for the fact that you are working with dancers who are not yet professionals? They're still growing, they're still learning, they're developing.
That's a really interesting question, because it's often the balancing point. Where as an educator in this role, I'm really an educator, you want to encourage people rather than just demand from them. But in dance, unless there is a certain amount of pressure, you actually cannot achieve what is important. Like, you know, if it was easy, anyone could do it. And it is really in the dedication to ideals and the kind of strict adherence to whatever rules and guidelines the choreographer imparts in his work. It is in achieving that the work becomes something living. And the ideal is to bring it to that point where it's alive and it looks the same as it would if the choreographer himself had created it in that moment. Hmm. And this is a really tricky thing in dance, because you have to find that language. I often make the parallel to learning a language, because each choreographer creates in his or her own language with its own syntax and grammar and style of expression. And every single dancer that will dance the piece has to learn and master that language in a very short amount of time. But yet we don't want robots reciting text. We want to find that place where each individual is able to do all that, master that language, and yet retain the essential part of themselves that makes them an intriguing artist, an engaging artist. And that is where it is often, it's often in the very last rehearsals that this actually happens. For a long time in the process, you're simply insisting on a very strict interpretation of, you know, the arms are here, the count is there, and you need to look there, and very, very specific instructions. But yet the whole time you're trying to provide that,
you're trying to impart the spirit behind the technique, right?
You are. You're trying to impart the spirit, definitely, but you're also trying to provide that, trail of breadcrumbs that will allow each individual to bring themselves into it eventually, to allow themselves to be alive in that moment. And it's like, you know, overlapping spheres where, you know, one sphere represents the demands of the choreography and the other sphere represents the needs of each individual or the expressive quality of each individual. And where they overlap, that is like the magic possibility space that they have to bring all of their energy into.
It strikes me that this is that dance is one of the last frontiers where technology, living in an age of technological wonders, isn't that useful. Certainly dancers now all go online and watch video of great dance, but it still happens one person at a time, yes? Mm-hmm. It's still that human connection is still super important.
That's true. And I was going to, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think the students, they really understand, who Nacho is and what this work is about, because they have that availability of technology. But it's one thing to watch it, and it's another thing to do it. And I think what's really nice about having Kevin here is that he's done the work, he's taught the work, he's worked with the choreographer, he understands it really well. And for our students to come in contact with someone that has that sort of understanding certainly supersedes anything that you could watch on a video, because he can physically come into contact with them and impart that knowledge that's going to help them develop as artists. That's probably, I think, the biggest difference between what we are at Butler and a professional company, is that we're trying to develop these artists. Certainly, we want to continue to develop them technically, but an opportunity like this goes beyond simple technique and sort of digs into something that's a little bit more deeper and a little bit more profound, and it's a wonderful opportunity for them. Certainly, dance does not need the technology the way that perhaps other artistic mediums do, and I think that kind of makes it nice that there's still something traditional and historically based that our students can come into contact, even as they develop these new artistic skills.
Sharon Gamble with Nacho Duato's ballet master, Kevin Irving, as well as Butler Dance Department member, Derek Reed. See Duato's Vas por Muerto, For You I Die, at Butler Ballet's Midwinter Dance Festival on Friday, February 17th and Saturday, February 18th at 8 p.m. at Clues Memorial Hall. You can get more information at cluesHall.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4, when I'll get a preview of a movie night with the Indianapolis Opera.
I'll find out about the upcoming Woodcarvers show at Eagle Creek Park.
And I'll find out about the Indianapolis Art and Antique Show. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more. Please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.